Okay, we're picking up after a little bit of a hiatus. I apologize for the last 2 weeks. But we're picking up back with Pirkei Avos. We're up to Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav. And again, just to catch ourselves back into the spirit of things, so the Mishnayos in the beginning of Pirkei Avos are going through the Shalshelis HaKabbalah, the chain of transmission of the tradition. Again, starting with Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, going down to Yoshua, and then going through the series of individuals who are known as the Zugos, the pairs, where two great Gedolim were the spiritual leaders of the Jewish people at any given time. We had learned over the last couple of times about the first set of Zugos, Yossi ben Yoezer Ish Tzreda, and Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. One was the Nasi, one was the head of the Sanhedrin, one was the Avbezdin, which was roughly equivalent to being the second in command of the Bezdin of the Sanhedrin. And then this great pair of Zugos passed on the tradition, as we're about to read in Mishnah Vav, to yet another pair of great Chachamim who led the Jewish people following them. So that's what we read in the beginning of Mishnah Vav, Yoshua ben Prachya, v'nitai ho'ar Beili, kiblu mehem. After the days of Yossi ben Yochanan, Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, so they passed on the tradition to Yoshua ben Prachya, who was the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, and Nitai Ho'ar Beili, who was the Avbezdin, the second in command of the Sanhedrin, and they were the leaders over the Jewish people. We're about to learn a statement from the Nasi, from Yoshua ben Prachya, and before we take a look at his actual statement, so I want to share a little bit of the historical background of that time in general, and some of the life events of Yoshua ben Prachya in particular. I think we'll see that they're important to a full understanding of what's going on over here in the Mishnah. If you recall, when we spoke about the last set of Zugos, Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, we pointed out that they were leaders of the Jewish people right before the revolt of the Chashmonaim, of the Hasmoneans. They were leading the Jewish people at a time when Antiochus was in charge of Eretz Yisrael, when Antiochus made all of the anti-Jewish decrees that he put into place, where Jews were being martyred because of their observance of Torah and mitzvahs. And we pointed out that Yossi ben Yoezer himself is described by the Midrashim as having died al Kiddush Hashem, that he was martyred because of his involvement in teaching Torah, learning Torah, doing mitzvahs. Spoke about that a little bit. Obviously, not long after that period of time, the Chashmonaim rebelled against the Syrian Greeks, ultimately drove them out of Eretz Yisrael, and established their own dynasty. So on the surface, that's a great thing. I mean, that's why we celebrate Hanukkah. However, we also know that as time went on, the dynasty of the Chashmonaim, which had started out in such a positive fashion, the Chashmonaim had been the champions of Torah and mitzvos, that dynasty devolved. You know, it became something that was very distanced, unfortunately, from Torah and mitzvos. And the Chashmonai kings, in particular, became very antagonistic towards the Rabbanon. The Gemara in Kiddushin tells a story about one of the Chashmonai kings that the Gemara refers to as Yanai. Historically, he's referred to as Alexander Yanai. So the Gemara tells the story as that Yanai, this king of the Chashmonaim, was had a military victory, and he made a huge party upon his return in the royal palace, and he invited all of the Chachamim to come and participate in the party. During the course of the party, an advisor to Yanai HaMelech suggested to him, wouldn't it be a nice thing if you were to come out to the party wearing the tzitz, the forehead plate of the Kohen Gadol? After all, remember, the Chashmonaim were Kohanim, and what better way to celebrate your victory than to show that not only are you a king, but you're entitled to serve as a Kohen, and particularly as a Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash, and you should come to the party wearing the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol to indicate that. So King Yanai comes out to the party wearing the tzitz, and right away one of the older Chachamim gets up and says in public, Yanai HaMelech, it's enough that you're a king. Why don't you leave the kahuna gedola to others? Leave the role of being a Kohen Gadol to other people. Why do you have to be both a king and a Kohen Gadol? And the Gemara tells us that the subtext to the story was they actually had questions about his yichus as a Kohen, again, for whatever reason. And they thought that the truth is they weren't quite sure that he was, you know, even though he was descended from Kohanim, they weren't quite sure that he was really fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash altogether. As you could understand from Yanai's perspective, this didn't go over very well. You know, here he was at this victory party, celebrating the fact that he had conquered, you know, these foreign nations. And, you know, he saw himself as, you know, the ultimate ruler. He's both the king and the Kohen Gadol. So this went over like a ton of bricks. And he turned to his advisor and said, so what do you think I should do with these rabbis who really don't accept my authority altogether? And the advisor said, kill him. What else do you do with rabbis? So, okay, fine. So Yanai HaMelech at that point embarked on a campaign to basically round up the rabbis and kill them. And as you could imagine, this basically ripped religious life in Eretz Yisrael at that point, into a terrible, terrible position. At that time, Yoshua ben Prachya, who we're learning about today, was the Nasi, was the head of the Sanhedrin. And the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sota that Yoshua ben Prachya went into hiding. He fled Eretz Yisrael and went to the city of Alexandria in Egypt. Alexandria in Egypt at that time was still under Greek rule, so he was free from the rule of the Hashmonaim. Again, imagine the irony. You know, this head of the Sanhedrin has to run away from the Jewish state in order to be protected and be able to, you know, teach Torah, learn Torah, and practice Torah u'mitzvah. So he goes into hiding in Alexandria. And basically, you know, there's this whole period of turmoil in Klal Yisrael where it's basically illegal to be a rabbi. The rabbis are being rounded up and murdered by the king, who's the head of state, by the king, who himself is Jewish and a descendant of the Hashmonaim, of Matisyahu, of Yehuda Maccabee, and all of those people who stood up on behalf of Torah and mitzvahs. Again, it's one of these very tragic ironies of history that the very descendants of the people who went to war to protect Torah u'mitzvahs are now going to war to destroy Torah u'mitzvahs. It happens to be, again, in one of the other ironies of history, that this Alexander Yanai's brother-in-law is none other than Shimon ben Shetach, who we're going to read about a little bit later in Pirkei Avos. Shimon ben Shetach at that time is one of the younger leaders among the rabbis. Ultimately, he is going to be the replacement for Yoshua ben Prachya and will take over as the head of the Sanhedrin. Apparently, being a brother-in-law to the king only gets you so far if you're a rabbi, because Shimon ben Shetach as well went into hiding to escape the wrath of his brother-in-law. Talk about a dysfunctional family. And but he didn't go down to Egypt. He stayed in Eretz Yisrael, and ultimately his sister, who was the queen, managed to convince her husband to spare her brother and to allow him to come out of hiding. Once Shimon ben Shetach comes out of hiding, apparently he manages to calm his brother-in-law, the king, down, and at a certain point it becomes safe once again for the Chachamim, for the Rabbanim, to be out in the open in Eretz Yisrael. At that point, Shimon ben Shetach sends a message down to Alexandria, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya is still hiding out, and he tells him the following. And this is the story, the way that it's conveyed in the Gemara Masechta Sota, Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara there says that Shimon ben Shetach sent down a message to Alexandria. Mini Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. I send you greetings from Yerushalayim, the holy city. Loch Alexandria Shom Mitzrayim. I send it to you, O Alexandria in Egypt. Achosi, my sister. Ba'ali Shorui Besochech. My husband is dwelling among you. Va'ani Yosheves Shomema. And I'm back here in Eretz Yisrael, all desolate. It's obviously a poetic reference to the idea that his colleague, or his older colleague, Yoshua ben Prachya, is in Egypt. Shimon ben Shetach feels, quote-unquote, lonely, being alone in Eretz Yisrael. And wouldn't it be nice if Yoshua ben Prachya could come back and join him once again in Eretz Yisrael? Omar, Yoshua ben Prachya, got the message, this poetry. Again, perhaps there was a need to write it in this oblique fashion. Perhaps they were worried about who was reading the mail, you know, either on the way out from Eretz Yisrael or down in Egypt, you know, so that he sent it in some kind of code. So Omar, Yoshua ben Prachya, said, Shma mina, havi le shloma. Oh, it sounds like things are peaceful once again back in Eretz Yisrael. I will come back to Eretz Yisrael and reestablish myself there as the Nasi, as the head of the Sanhedrin. Then the Gemara tells the following story. Ki Asa, as Yoshua ben Prachya was on his way from Egypt back to Eretz Yisrael, Iklo lahu ushpiza. He, and as we'll see, some of his Talmidim, because apparently numerous students of his had fled with him down to Egypt. Again, it wasn't safe for the Rebbe. It probably wasn't safe for the students either. So he went with a whole entourage down to Egypt, and now they were coming back to Eretz Yisrael. So they all stopped off in a certain inn, a certain hotel. Kom kamayu biyakara. The owner of the inn treated them with great respect. Shapir avdi le yakara tuva. And they showed them great honor. Yosef v'komishtabach. So while they were in the inn, Yoshua ben Prachya was sitting around with his Talmidim, and he was praising the inn owner, and he had very fond words for the wife of the innkeeper. He said, Kama no achsan yozo. The wife of this innkeeper, she's lovely, she's wonderful, by which he meant, you know, she's treated us so nicely during the time that we're here in the inn. Amar le echad mi talmidov. One of the Talmidim of Yoshua ben Prachya said to him, Rebbe, how can you say that the innkeeper is so nice and lovely? Eineha trutos. Her eyes aren't so nice. She doesn't look so pretty. I don't know what you're talking about, Rebbe, that she's so wonderful. Amar le. So Yeshua ben Prachya says to the Talmud, Rasha, bekach ata osek, that's where your mind is? I said that the innkeeper's wife is this lovely, wonderful woman. I meant she's a balas chesed, she took care of us, she's treated us nicely. And you're telling me what she looks like? That's where your mind is? So he was incensed, Yeshua ben Prachya. Apik arba mea shipure vishamte. On the spot, they pulled out 400 shofros. Why you're traveling with 400 shofros, I don't know. But, you know, blowing the shofar is traditional. Right, I guess so. Right? Maybe he stopped off at a Judaica store on the way up to Eretz Yisrael. Right? He pulled up 400 shofros, which traditionally, if you blew the shofar, that was the sign of excommunicating somebody. And he put this Talmud in a mild form of excommunication, meaning, come on, you know, how do you talk? How do you talk in such a fashion? I don't want to think about what Yeshua ben Prachya would think if he listened to people talk today. That's a different issue. But, okay, but, you know, back in the day, so he was upset. You know, how could you talk in such a way? So he excommunicated for a brief period of time this Talmud. Now, you know, back in the day, excommunication for a certain period of time was a not unheard of way of dealing with somebody who got really out of line. In other words, you didn't excommunicate the person forever and ever. You said, you know, it was like the equivalent of telling a child, go to your room. I don't mean to say stay in your room forever, right? Go to your room, you know, think about what you did wrong. And then eventually, you know, we'll let you out for supper, if not for supper, for breakfast tomorrow morning, you know. So, you know, back in the day, if you were a Talmud and you misbehaved, so we'll put you in a brief period of excommunication and then, you know, we'll deal with it. So he excommunicated this Talmud. Koyoma also lekame. Every day thereafter, this Talmud came over to his Rebbe Yoshua ben Prachya, pleading for the excommunication to be lifted. He felt terrible about what he had done. Velo kible, and Yoshua ben Prachya was always dismissive of him. Yom echad havakari kriyas shema. There was one day where Yeshua ben Prachya was sitting and he was reading Kriyas Shema. Also lekameh. And at that moment, this Talmud came in front of Yeshua ben Prachya, again for his daily ritual of begging for forgiveness and asking for the excommunication to be lifted. Hava b'dayti lekabuleh. And at that point, Yeshua ben Prachya, you know, for whatever reason, had a change of heart. You know, he felt it was time to lift the excommunication. Maybe, you know, he had planned to only let it go for a certain amount of time. Maybe he thought, okay, you know, this Talmud is really coming every day for 3 weeks. You know, it's really time to be mochel him. But Yoshua ben Prachya was in the middle of saying Kriyas Shema, so he couldn't say, you know, mocholach, you're forgiven. He couldn't verbalize the fact that he was okay with lifting the communication. Achvi le biyode. So he made a sign with his hand to indicate either wait till I finish saying Kriyas Shema, or don't worry, the excommunication is lifted. He made some kind of gesture to indicate that, okay, you know, things are looking good.
How would an excommunication generally be?
So he would get a minion together and, you know, declare that the excommunication was over. So, you know, maybe he was indicating, okay, wait here, I'm going to finish Kriyas Shema, we'll lift the excommunication. But in any case, the Talmud misunderstood the gesture. That's, I guess, why it pays. Everybody should learn the same sign language, right? You know, signs can be misinterpreted. The Talmud misunderstood the gesture. Savar midchedachile, and he thought that the gesture meant get out of here. You know, he misunderstood what he meant. So azal zakaf levein topalcha. So this Talmud went and set up a brick, declared this brick to be an avodah zara, an idol, and started worshipping it, and started encouraging others to worship it as well. Basically, he said, look, if this is the way it's going to be, you know, I might as well go start my own religion, because, you know, just I'm not getting anywhere over here. And, you know, this intense reaction by Yeshua ben Prachya seems to have backfired. Amar lei. So Yeshua ben Prachya, when he was able to speak, went over to the Talmud and said, Chazor b'cha. Okay, enough already. Give up the Avodah Zarah. Come back, you know, we'll embrace you back into the fold. Amar lei, so the Talmud said to him, Kach mikublani mimcha, Rebbe, you yourself taught me. Kol achote umachti es harabim, ein maspikin biyado lasos tshuva. If somebody sins and causes the masses to sin, so God does not enable that person to do tshuva, I'm lost, I'm a hopeless case. So Rebbe, it was nice knowing you, but I'm gone. I'm out of here. I'm not coming back under any circumstances. You go your way. I'm going to go in my way. It's a tragic story. But it may be an even more tragic story than we think at first glance. Because although our version of the printed Gemara just describes this individual as Echad mitalmidov, one of the students of Yoshua ben Prachya, there are other versions of the Gemara, older manuscripts, that identify this student as Yeshu HaNotzri, Jesus of Nazareth, Yoshka. So in other words, Yoshka started off being a Talmud of Yoshua ben Prachya. He made a remark that was out of place. Yoshua ben Prachya, as the Gemara earlier says, pushed him aside, b'shtei yodayim, with two hands. And because of the inflexibility of Yoshua ben Prachya, the Gemara earlier is critical of Yoshua ben Prachya. The Gemara earlier says, la'olam tehei smol dochev imin mikareves. A person, in a famous phrase, should always push aside with the left, but bring back closer with the right. In other words, even when you have to discipline somebody, do it with a measure, right? Don't go overboard with discipline, because you see that, you know, over-disciplining somebody doesn't work very well. Lo ki Yehoshua ben Prachya shedachva le'echad mitalmidav b'shtei yadav. And says the Gemara, do not follow the example of Yehoshua ben Prachya, who pushed aside this student with two hands, and look what happened as a result. Now, we know, just as an interesting aside, is this Yeshu HaNotzri, in fact, you know, the founder of Christianity? Well, I mean, the name is pretty similar. You know, Yeshu HaNotzri is the name which is used in rabbinic literature. You know, Yeshu is Yoshua, you know, which is the original name, the Hebrew name of Yoshka. Notzri, the Nazarene, I mean, it seems like it's the same person. There is some discussion on that point. So, first of all, we should be aware of the fact that during the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church heavily censored the Gemara and heavily censored other Jewish works. The fact that our versions of the Gemara do not reference Yeshu HaNotzri, but just call him Echad Mitalmidov, one of the students of Yoshua ben Prachya, is almost certainly the result of medieval church censorship, where, again, the church, you know, the people in the church actually read Hebrew very well and went through the Gemara. And, you know, any reference to Yeshu HaNotzri was taken out. They didn't want to leave intact anything in the Gemara that would seem to be derogatory to Yeshu HaNotzri, as, you know, as the story over here seems to indicate. Is this, in fact, Yeshu HaNotzri, is this, in fact, the founder of Christianity? So, one of the medieval commentaries, Rabbi Nachum HaMeiri, actually writes that it's not. Why is it not? Well, because the history is off. Yoshua ben Prachya, as we just spoke about, lived during the time of the Hasmonean rule of Eretz Yisrael. He lived during the time of the Chashmonaim, when Alexander Yanai was ruling over Klal Yisrael. So that's, you know, approximately 100 years or so before the Common Era. And generally speaking, it's assumed that the founder of Christianity lived somewhere around the time 30 of the Common Era. So, in other words, historically, it seems to be about 130 years off. In other words, you know, the Yeshu HaNotzri described over here seems to be running around and doing things about 130 years before the founder of Christianity was crucified. So because of that, the Meiri says, this is a different Yeshu HaNotzri. This is not the Yeshu HaNotzri who founded Christianity. This is a different guy. Now, there might have been a very strong motivation for the Meiri to make that statement, because one of the other censored Gemaras, which was taken out in its entirety, is the passage in Sanhedrin, which describes how the Sanhedrin executed Yeshu HaNotzri. Now, that was a passage that you could imagine in the Middle Ages, you know, led to a lot of friction. What's that? Yeah, Enochinami, not just in the Middle Ages, but especially in the Middle Ages. Right, so the story as described in the New Testament, Lahavdil, describes how the Romans did it. But there is a passage that is taken out of our standard Gemaras, but it appears in the older manuscripts, describing how the Sanhedrin executed Yeshu HaNotzri and executed his five students. So here also you wonder, that's not exactly the way the story is told in Christian literature. So, you know, many Christians during the Middle Ages who were familiar with the Gemara would point to the fact that your own texts say that you killed our Messiah, you know? So, and that was not a good position to be in, you know, if you were in the Middle Ages. I mean, again, in 2019, maybe people can, you know, write angry things on blogs and things like that. In the Middle Ages, if, you know, you were accused of killing the Christian Messiah, they went into your town and, you know, massacred people right and left, right? So, I mean, the stakes were a little bit higher in the Middle Ages. So the Meiri, who lived in Provence in the early Middle Ages, made a point of saying, it's not the same Yeshu HaNotzri. Even that passage in Sanhedrin, which describes Yeshu HaNotzri being executed by the Sanhedrin, that's a different guy. That's the Talmud of Yoshua ben Prachya. And we know that there was 130 years approximately between that Yeshu HaNotzri and the person that you refer to as Yeshu HaNotzri. So don't blame us, you know, for anything that happened to that person. Different person, same name, but different person, nothing to do with the founder of Christianity. It's actually interesting, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal, who gave Shiurim on Pirkei Avos, they recently published, they wrote up his Shiurim on Pirkei Avos and published them. So he actually makes the following suggestion, which is an interesting read of the history. He suggests that no, the Yeshu HaNotzri, who's referred to over here, is one and the same with the founder of Christianity. In other words, he was a Talmud of Yoshua ben Prachya, and the Sanhedrin put him to death. So how do you square that with the fact that Christian literature identifies Yeshu HaNotzri as having been born around, as having been put to death around the year 30 of the Common Era? So Rabbi Yaakov suggests that the Christians wanted to claim that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed as a response to the Jews killing Yeshu HaNotzri. So they played around with the history and assigned him to a much later point in history. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed around the year 70, about 40 years after the founder of Christianity was supposedly put to death. So, you know, the founders of Christianity played around with the history and moved Yeshu HaNotzri from his real historical time as a Talmud of Yoshua ben Prachya to a much later point in history. But in point of fact, our sources are correct. It is Yeshu HaNotzri, but he lived much earlier than the Christian historical sources attribute him to, claim that he lived. Again, a lot of discussion around that issue. Whether it's Yeshu HaNotzri, the founder of Christianity, or not, one thing is very clear. Yoshua ben Prachya had a Talmud. He pushed that Talmud aside, and that Talmud, because he was pushed aside, went out and got people to worship some form of idolatry, and it turned out very bad for everyone involved. Right? And that much, you know, is clear and undisputed within the Gemara.
But in Boeotia world, right? There's nothing where, I don't think there's anything where, Yeshu made an idol or something. He made law,
Right.
He watered down laws so that, if he took over and Mitzvah, he did kind of nonsense in the river,
Right. So I would say, to that one of two things interpreting the Gemara. Either you're right, and that's a proof to the Meiri that we're talking about a different person, right? This is not the Yeshu HaNotzri who founded Christianity. Or if you say that it's talking about the same person, setting up a brick and having people bow down to it is a metaphor that Chazal are using, and he made a different religion, right? I mean, it's true that if you think about it, what kind of religion involves bowing down to a brick? I mean, what would you call that? Brickism? What's the big... Okay, maybe they have a big kiddush. I mean, but, what would be the attraction exactly of bowing down to a brick? It's hard to really understand.
Tom would have understood that Hashem will forgive anything. I mean, his faith was that he was very superficial regarding this woman.
Right.
He didn't do anything like that. So how could he not think that Hashem would forgive him?
He
didn't forgive everything.
He just read it now. It wasn't any stupid deal out of him, and then he turned himself around.
No. So here we're talking about the Rebbe.
The Rebbe was not regarded so highly after what he did.
Well, okay. So we'll get to the actual Mishnah in a minute. This is all by way of background, right? Right. No. So the Talmud said, "I'm not going to be forgiven because I made a religion that caused the masses to sin." So because I caused the masses to sin, not because of the original remark, but because...
Why would he have done that? Why wouldn't he have just realized, I'll be more, or Hashem will forgive me, I didn't do such a thing.
Right, because he lost his everything. In other words, his Rebbe rejected him.
No, I understand the Rebbe, but he also learned. He was not an idiot.
Yeah, okay, but, again, he was excommunicated, and, he felt he lost everything when people are desperate. I mean, that's really the message of the Gemara. When you push people too hard, sometimes they don't come back. Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous, tremendous lesson. Somebody needs to be disciplined. Okay, don't push them too hard, or you'll push them out of the fold altogether. Now, that whole story, I think, is a backdrop, an important backdrop, for the actual words of Yoshua ben Prachya. Right, so again, this is the Rebbe. This was Yoshka's Rebbe, right? I mean, I don't think that's how he wants to be known for perpetuity, right? But Lamaisa, that's who we're talking about over here, is Yoshka's Rebbe. So Yoshua ben Mishnah Vav, Yoshua ben Prachya of Nitai Arbeli Kiblu Mehem, Yoshua ben Prachya Omer. Yoshua ben Prachya used to say three things: Aseilu Charav, make for yourself a Rebbe, uknei lecha chaver, and acquire for yourself a friend, veveidonis kol ha'adam lechafs lechus. And you have to judge people favorably. So, again, in a vacuum, you know, we understand the value of having a Rebbe and having a close friend. Because as all the Mefarshim say, the only way for a person to really learn and feel that they're not just doing it on their own, but that they're part of something bigger, is to have a Rebbe that they look up to who can teach them Torah, and to have a chaver, to have a friend with whom they can discuss words of Torah. The Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim Volozhin, writes that the chaver in this case, the friend, is not just the chavrusa, you know, what do you think the line means? What do you think the line means? But it means you should have somebody to talk over ideas in Avodas Hashem with, in service of God with. Right? They say that even the famous Vilna Gaon felt that he needed someone to give him Musa. So he appointed the Dubna Magid of Yaakov Krantz, who was much, much younger than the Vilna Gaon. He asked the Dubna Magid to be the one to give Musar to himself, because he felt, you know, if I'm just sitting by myself and, you know, everyone's afraid to say anything to me because I'm the Vilna Gaon, how am I going to grow in my Yiddishkeit? How am I going to grow in my Avodas Hashem without somebody talking to me about my flaws and what I can do better? So, you know, he appointed, you know, the Dubna Magid, you know, to come and give him Musar on a periodic basis so that he should, you know, not feel that he's doing everything by himself. That's Knei Lecha Chaver. You know, everybody needs a colleague to learn with, to grow with, and everybody needs a Rebbe who will be a source of hashpah, a source of influence upon the person. There's an interesting comment along those lines in the Rambam's Pirush HaMishnayos. The Rambam says, it says, Asei Lecha Rav, make a Rebbe for yourself. Why not just Asei Rav? You know, make a Rebbe. I mean, we understand the Rebbe's for you, right? Who else are you making the Rebbe for? So the Rambam says, you know, sometimes the person that you make into your teacher may not be so much greater than you are in terms of Torah learning. You know, again, when you're in first grade, second grade, third grade, you know, the Rebbe knows everything. But at a certain point, you realize that nobody knows everything, right? And at a certain point, let's say a person grows tremendously in Torah learning, and you get to a point where, okay, who's going to be your Rebbe exactly? Everybody needs the Rebbe. Even the Rebbe needs the Rebbe. Okay, but who's going to be the Rebbe's Rebbe? So find somebody. The Rebbe that, you know, the self-appointed Rebbe that you have may not be that much greater than you. Maybe in certain ways you're even greater than him. You need somebody to be able to receive Torah from. You know, you have to have that kind of relationship where somebody in some way or another is your teacher, is giving you something, where you're a recipient. If you don't have that kind of relationship with somebody else, your Torah itself is going to go stale and is not going to be brought out and actualized to the best extent. Now, before we get to the third statement over here, just these two words, these first two statements of Yoshua ben Prachya, make for yourself a Rebbe, acquire for yourself a friend, really speak, unfortunately, to what his Talmud was lacking. His Talmud, maybe arguably through no fault of his own, or for minimal fault of his own, his Talmud lost out on having a Rebbe, because the Rebbe refused to speak to him. Lost out on having chaverim, on having colleagues, because he was excommunicated. And look what happened, right? So Yoshua ben Prachya, I think, perhaps drawing on that event, which probably shook him to the core, what we can imagine for the rest of his life, Yoshua ben Prachya walked around devastated by what he had done, right? So he said, I take away from this terrible incident that everybody needs the connection with the Rebbe, everybody needs that connection with chaverim, and I see that if you don't have that, so then terrible, terrible things can happen as a result. What about the third statement? Ve'avidonis kol ha'adam l'chav sechus. Judge everybody favorably. So first of all, what does that statement mean? So the standard interpretation of that statement, which most of the Mefarshim understand this way, the Gemara seems to understand this way in a different context, is as follows. A person does something, and you're not sure how to interpret what that person did. You know, is what the person did something which was a good thing to do? Was it a bad thing to do? You could kind of look at it both ways. So, having done it, kol ha'adam l'chav zechus, give the person the benefit of the doubt. Assume, unless the person is a tremendous rasha, in which case you could probably assume that they're doing something evil, but if the person's a run-of-the-mill, you know, middle-of-the-road kind of guy, you know, sometimes he does the right thing, sometimes he does the wrong thing. If you see that he does something and you're not sure whether to interpret it, you know, in a positive fashion or a negative fashion, assume that he was probably doing it in a positive fashion. That's the standard way of understanding. Have a donis kol ha'adam l'chav zechus. But there's a different way of understanding this phrase, which is suggested by Reb Chaim Volozhin, and Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky suggests a similar interpretation, and that's as follows. We just got through saying how you need to have a Rebbe and you need to have a colleague. Guess what? Sooner or later, you will discover some flaw in your Rebbe or in your colleague. It's inevitable. It's inevitable because people are not perfect. You can have the greatest Rebbe in the world, but even the greatest Rebbe in the world is a mortal human being. You're going to find sooner or later something which is not 100%. Right? Maybe it'll take you years before you find that thing. But sooner or later, everybody has flaws, everybody has mistakes. And with a chaver as well, with a friend as well, you know, you could have this very close friend that you're incredibly close to, and this friend is helping you out in Torah learning, and then one day the friend wakes up and does something which, you know, which you're not so happy about. Says Reb Chaim Volozhin, if you want to keep that rav and that chaver, you have to judge people favorably. Meaning, I think we would say in the modern day expression, you have to cut people slack. You have to be tolerant of people. Judge people favorably, not just when, you know, there's an action which they did which could be interpreted for good or for bad. And, you know, it's ambiguous, I'm not sure how to judge it. You're pretty sure that what they did is wrong. You're pretty sure the Rebbe did something wrong. You're pretty sure that the Chaver did something wrong. And there really doesn't seem to be any obvious way of explaining it. So do you say, okay, forget about it, you know, I'm done with the relationship? So Yehoshua ben Prachya says no. You know, judge people favorably, even when, as far as you can tell, they made an error, they made a mistake, cut them the slack, don't sever the Rebbe Talmud relationship, don't sever the collegial relationship that you have. People are human, and you have to understand that people are human and cut them that slack.
Would the phrase "call ha'adam" mean like look at the whole picture, like the whole
system? Yeah. So I forget who, but some of Farshim suggest that idea. Have it done is call ha'adam, not just every man, but the entirety of the person. You know. Okay. So this Rebbe, who's 99.9% a tzaddik and a yashar and always, you know, hits the nail on the head. You know, maybe he said something once that was a little bit off. Maybe he did something once that was a little bit off. You're not happy with this. You're not happy with that. Okay, it happens. I mean, you know, nobody is exactly perfect the way you'd like them to be. So, have you done it? Kol ha'adam. You know, look at the big picture. You know, you can't get obsessed with that 1%. Perhaps we can suggest, in light of the story, the tragic story that's described by the Gemara Masechta Sota, that Yehoshua ben Prachya, in this last line, is talking not only to the Talmud, but he's talking to himself. You know, if I would have cut that Talmud a little bit more slack, maybe he wouldn't have gone off and set up that brick, i.e. that other religion that everybody else is worshipping today. Maybe I should have been a little bit more tolerant, you know, in dealing with that particular Talmud. And if I would have been a little bit more tolerant, as the Gemara itself says, it was wrong of Yehoshua ben Prachya to push him away b'shtei yodayim, with two hands. You should have pushed him away, but then pulled him back, you know, at the very same time. You should have figured out how to express his displeasure, but at the same time not let him go out of the fold. If I would have been a little bit more easygoing, if I myself would have been done l'chav zechus, I know that the guy did something wrong. I'm not questioning that he did something wrong. But maybe I should have judged him a little bit more favorably, cut him a little bit of slack, showed him a little bit of tolerance. If I would have been more tolerant in that way, maybe the tragic results wouldn't have come about as a result. And that way, the Rebbe-Talmud relationship and the relationship he had with his Chaverim would have kept him in the fold as opposed to what ended up ultimately happening.
Maybe he should have talked in the middle of Shema the way that
you know, Abraham said, Hashem, wait, you know, people are coming, I have to greet them.
Right, that's interesting, you know, so maybe, I don't know, you know, maybe should have held up a sign. Right. No, so it's a delicate balance, right? In the end of the day, you know, the only one who's really responsible ultimately for what you do is you yourself. But Yeshua ben Prachya felt, perhaps, that if I, you know, maybe I could have kept him. You know, maybe if I would have acted a little bit differently, I could have kept him, you know, within the fold. What's that?
Probably so.
Right, and probably so. I mean, again, the Gemara is critical Yeshua ben Prachya for having pushed him aside in such a way. Again, you know, you can appreciate that a man who was persecuted for his readiness to teach Torah and ran away to a different country in order to do so had a zero tolerance policy with somebody who was starting up with the cause of Torah mitzvahs. You can appreciate that, but at the same time, Yeshua ben Prachya felt, you know what, I could have done more to be makariv of this person. Just on one last note, there's an interesting idea which is suggested here by the Abarbanel in a somewhat different vein. The Abarbanel ties this Mishnah to Mishnah Dalad, where Yossi ben Yoezer says, your house should be a gathering house for Chachamim. He based Chobes Vad l'Chachamim. And according to the Abarbanel, Yeshua ben Prachya is reacting to that and adding a caveat to that statement. If you bring a lot of Chachamim into your house, so that's wonderful. But guess what? Chachamim don't always agree with one another. This may be news to people. Sometimes if you ask five different Rabbanim, you'll get 10 different answers in terms of what you're supposed to do, what you're supposed to think. And it can be very confusing. So comes Yeshua ben Prachya and says, great, have a lot of Chachamim over your house, but Asei Lecha Rav, have one Rebbe. Right? In other words, if you have 10 different Rebbeim, so you're gonna go out of your mind. In other words, because every Rebbe is gonna tell you to do, you know, something else. You know, I daven Monday morning in Satmar, and then Tuesday I go to Merkaz HaRav. Okay, you know, I'm trying to figure out what to do on the 5th of Iyar. You know, it's just not going to work so well. You have to have one Rebbe who's going to be your Rebbe. Now, the Abarbanel adds, you can have different Rebbeim for different areas of Torah. So, for instance, let's say I ask all of my Shabbos Shailos to this Rebbe, because I know that's really his expertise. And, you know, when I have medical issues, you know, certain Rebbe is better in terms of that. Okay? You know, and my hashkafas I get from Rebbe number 3. That's all okay. But if I get my hashkafas from Rebbe number 1 and Rebbe number 2 and Rebbe number 3 and Rebbe number 4, I'm not going to have a hashkafa at the end of the day. I'm going to have a big bilbul. I'm going to be very, very confused as to what I'm supposed to be doing. So that's what he says, Asei Lecha Rav, but Hevidonis Kol Ha'adam Lechav Suchos, judge everybody favorably. Because says the Abarbanel, you have your one Rebbe, but it doesn't mean that everybody else's Rebbe is wrong. Right? You have to be tolerant of the fact that, you know, again, as long as the Rebbeim are legitimate, you know, as long as they're within the fold, you know, this Rebbe may be your Rebbe, but just because the other Rebbe says something differently, and he has his Talmidim who are following him, that's okay. You know, you have to judge them favorably, even though you chose to connect to a certain Rebbe who has a certain mahalach, has a certain approach, and that's good. You know, you should follow that Rebbe and his approach, but recognize that there are other approaches that, you know, may be appropriate and may be correct as well. Okay, that's Hashem. We will pick up next week with Mishnah Zayin, and everyone should have a good week.
Thank you.